Hello, and welcome to the Gnostic Warrior radio show and podcast, broadcasting from GnosticWarrior.com in San Diego, California, to around the world. I'm your host, Mo, and today on the show, we have author, occult leader, and secret society member, Leo Lion Zagami. Leo is a writer and researcher known for his internet confessions since 2006. He has been involved in Freemasonry since 1993, the Rosicrucians, and later a prominent figure in Northern Europe. In the meantime, in 1999, he created inside the now infamous Monte Carlo Lodge of the P2, his own order called the Ordo Illuminatorium Universalis. In 2006, he decided to walk out from what he perceived as the criminal side of the New World Order after 3 years of internal conflicts he will later describe in his books. Zagami is still at present Grand Master of the Ordo Illuminatorium Universalis, who are considered by many the good side of the Vatican Illuminati. In this awesome podcast, Leo goes over the light side and the dark side of the Illuminati, and also the Ordo Illuminatorium Universalis and its aims. He also discusses some apocalyptic revelations that are happening right now inside of the Vatican, and what he says is 40 cardinals that have converted over to Islam. These are definitely apocalyptic times, and you're going to want to stay tuned for this great interview. But before we start the show, I have a quick request from the listeners around the world. Hey, all of my subscribers, supporters, and Gnostic Warriors, this is Mo, and I'm asking you guys to help support the Gnostic Warrior. You could do that two ways. Number one would be a small donation. Go to GnosticWarrior.com, and there's a donation button there on the right-hand side or in the navigation bar. We would please appreciate your donations. And also, for people out there that would love to have their own website, like I have, I've created several websites in my lifetime. I also own a website design firm. So if you're looking for somebody out there that you could trust who can make you an awesome website, please give me a call or give me an email. Again, it's my own company. It's called We Create Web Designs. And if you're looking for someone cool to do your website and you want to collaborate with a great company, please trust us. Trust Mo with We Create Web Designs. You can call me at area code 760-637-5125. Again, that number is 760-637-5125, or you can give me an email, moe at wecreatewebdesigns.com. And now it's time for the Gnostic Warrior radio show and podcast. Thanks again for being on the show today, Leo. It's great to have you on again. How you doing?
Very well. I'm glad to be on it again. I'm also glad to have met you personally and been able to share a meal with you and to be a little bit closer to you know, meeting in person somebody is a very different experience. And you gave me a very positive impression of yourself. So I'm glad also to be on the show for that reason.
Likewise, Leo, it was great to meet you in Long Beach. That was about, I'd say, 3 months now. Time flies. You know, you're having fun, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a lot of work because even in the time I've been spending in the United States, half of the day went through laying this new book that is going to be published here in Italy around November, December, which is a book I actually dedicated to the Illuminati in relation to music and Hollywood. You know, that are two subjects very popular at the moment. But I also think that these two subjects have been touched only in the surface, both by bloggers and by publications alike that are out there. So I wanted to give a more in-depth investigation, and I think that the product came out very well. And thanks also to the fact that I was in the United States, I could actually see things from a different perspective and also have some insider information directly from the source, which is, of course, Hollywood. So I'm glad also for that. And I'm going to be, of course, now that my publications will be also available in the English language soon, thanks to this courageous publisher we have from San Francisco, that is CCC Publishing, that also got endorsed by one of the biggest, the second biggest distribution of books in the U.S., independent distribution from Chicago. I will be able to release all five of my recent publications. So we will have, first of all, a book which I've been working on and in the last year and a half a lot since just after the election of Pope Francis, I started to work on it. I actually published a brief booklet in Italy, which was called The Last Pope. This time instead, the book is called Pope Francis, The Last Pope? It's an interesting book which focuses mostly on money, Masons and occultism in the decline of the Catholic Church, with a lot of information which I have gathered thanks to my inside sources and also documented, with photos, documents, so people will be able to verify all the claims that I make on this book, which is going to come out in the US and then worldwide in April 2015. So it's a book that basically it's based on the work that I conducted investigating the two main problems that are within the Vatican today, the problems that have been, let's say, the biggest ones. And one is, of course, the Vatican Bank, as you know, which is, of course, manipulated by Freemasons, by Knights of Malta, Knights of Columbus. There is, of course, Masonic lodges within the Vatican. They're not as open and regular as others, but they are very active and powerful. And at the same time, there is the gay lobby, which we have mentioned in the past, which is, of course, the biggest enemy of Pope Francis, because they side with the old Pope Ratzinger in this internal war. And so there is all these internal wars that this time, thanks to this publication, which is, as I said, detailed and with many, many references and stuff. So, it's a very big work to put together also for the English language, because, of course, I'm assisting also on the translation efforts, so to make sure that you get the right view of the situation.
Yeah, and let's please briefly, Leo, talk about that. Sorry to interrupt you. I know you have, of course, a lot of experience and a family that has roots there in Rome and Italy and the Vatican and then also around the world. So it gives you authority and also the background to talk about this subject. But for the audience out there, there's a lot of rumors and conspiracies going around in regards to the Illuminati, who they are. And a common thing and thread that I hear from you and other people in the know is that there's two factions of this Illuminati. One would be the dark side and one would be the light side. Can you touch on this briefly for the audience?
I would say that it's very difficult to touch briefly on this subject. It's so extensive. That's why we have my trilogy, The Confessions of an Illuminati, that will start coming out next year also in the US in September with the volume one. And then they will be published all the way through 2016. And basically the trilogy gives you the right idea, because it defines what are the irregular lodges, what are Freemasons and what are people connected to what is a fringe Freemasonry, occult Freemasonry, paramasonic orders, sects, knighthoods. It's a very vast network that we call Illuminati. So to actually explain it in detail, I have done this trilogy, which I don't know if you know, but it's a trilogy that contains 1,500 pages. It's a very big trilogy in the amount of documents that are included, in the amount of material, inside material that I show to the public, so it can better define the actual structure of how it works. In fact, the actual volume one opens up with what we can define as a topology of the structure of the Illuminati, of how these various secret societies also infiltrate each other, manipulate each other. They also work for an occult egregore. The egregore is the energy they created by the thoughts of a whole lodge, which basically feeds into this organism, what becomes really sort of living organism is an entity. In fact, they usually what they do, especially the occult people who are involved, the Freemasons who are involved with the occult, and they are not all involved with the occult, because as you know, there's also a lot of Masons who are social Masons, and they only pick up on the social side of it. You know that more. I mean, the majority probably are like this. Of course, we have people who also pick up on the esoteric and occult side. In the U.S., we have seen with people like Lomailo Duquette, like Wesselman, who have been, you know, publishing also books on Freemasonry in recent years, that the OTO, which they belong to, is actually probably the faction which has infiltrated better Freemasonry from the occult side. Because of their knowledge of the occult, people like James Wasserman know that. You gave me that wonderful book, The Secret of Masonic Washington, a guidebook to signs, symbols, and ceremonies, which I find very interesting, but it demonstrates that these days, him, who was responsible for one of the most important lodges of the OTO, I think, in New York for many years, and also, I mean, Lomailo Duquette, who, as you know, even published, I mean, I'm the publisher which is going to publish my books.
Yeah, lots of stuff on magic, on Enochian magic.
Correct. But also Freemasonry.
Yeah,
also
definitely.
Freemasonry, because they are also Freemasons. And the fact that you have to understand that the OTO and the Illuminati, when they came together in this formula that was put together by Theodore Royce, they actually called themselves Academia Masonica. So they actually wanted to bring around something that was like an academy of Freemasonry, you know?
So you have some people such as Lilo, who's an author, but also involved in magic, and then you have other Masons that are more academic and involved in history, and some are judges. So they cover every aspect of the arts, correct?
Well, the thing is that it all then gets controlled by the esoteric and the magic side, unfortunately, in the end. Okay. So if there is an infiltration in their midst, it actually can ruin the energy even of the lodge, you know, because if like I said in the past, I don't know if it was on your show or on another show, but if you bring a black magician in a lodge, even if you are not, even if you don't know he's a black magician, you could actually suffer the consequences because of this egregore, this energy that is created by a lodge needs to be pure, you know? Okay. That's why it's very dangerous also to work with what I do also with my order, no? Because putting together people in the same room, you have to be sure that the intentions and the purity of intentions of these people, and it's not always easy to do that because we all get tricked, we all get fooled,
of course.
And so it's very difficult. I mean, I have actually invited more and more Masons. You can hear the bells maybe in the background because I'm near church at the moment. as I say, I invited very many Masons also in the U.S. to open up to the idea that they should be a little bit more aware of what's going on in their lodges, also magically. Because it's very easy for Freemasons who, for example, belong to the OTO, so that have a more of an esoteric skill, to infiltrate and control them. Because the Illuminati themselves, from what the OTO is originally born, is something that was created at the time by Weishaupt and in a period in which there were many different branches of mystery schools, also the Illuminati of Avignon by Don Pernetti, that focus on a profound study of the various rituals, rites, traditions. And also they did this not only for the reasons that should be usually the reason should be your own perfection, your own culture, no? When you go inside these realities to actually acquire knowledge, but the reasons that are more of manipulation and control. And that means to prepare themselves better so they can then manipulate that reality. Crowley was very clever in actually stealing from all the various Masonic rites during his career and putting the main keys of knowledge that are contained inside his OTO structure. In fact, when he was, I think it was in Detroit at one point, he was actually nearly silenced by the Freemasons who got really angry with him because he was doing that. And of course, he had to kind of make them a little bit less obvious. But the thing is that there is some truths that are contained in these Masonic rituals, but there is also some passwords, some secret passwords, some secret keys of knowledge that once you acquire, they are common also to various structures. That's why, for example, within the Vatican, there is Freemasons who operate with people who sometimes are officially totally anti-Masonic or with groups that are of traditionalists who hate Masons. I mean, but the way that they operate is that they have an understanding of some secrets, and these secrets bind them together, even if they have they come from a different perspective, a walk of life.
Okay. Yeah.
So I have in the work here that we are doing at the moment with publishing this book, Pope Francis, the Last Pope in the U.S., I think that it will shock many Catholics and also many non-Catholics for what is really happening in the Vatican at the moment, because the Vatican is the last piece of the puzzle for the New World Order Parliament of Religion structure, which has been actually proposed yesterday during his visit by Shimon Peres, which is the head of Israel. And he has proposed to Pope Francis to substitute the UN with something which is more like a parliament of religions. That, now, we know that for many years we have known that this is actually the final realization of a plan, which is the one world religion structure, no?
Yeah, definitely. And that's been the plan.
So the fact that it's coming to fruition in this particular moment of time where we have so many things happening.
So many signs, right? So many signs.
So many signs. Like, I mean, we saw the crisis growing with Russia. At the same time, we saw the Middle Eastern charade with ISIS.
Initially. And then Pope Ratzinger has basically resigned, and then Pope Francis, and then he's changing policies left and right in the Vatican.
Well, Ratzinger resigned, Pope Francis arrived.
Correct.
The interesting thing is that Pope Francis actually resigned himself to Ratzinger a couple of years before. Not many people know that, but there is a document attesting that. And Ratzinger just put the resignations, he just put it away, he forgot about it. And so then it was possible for Pope Francis to be elected. So he didn't accept his resignation. We have to understand that Pope Francis was already nearly becoming a pope in 2005. Then what happened was that the Verbisky scandal, I don't know if you heard about it, in Argentina, raised, where these two Jesuits were kidnapped in the 70s. During the fascist dictatorship in Argentina. And at this point, what happened was that in 2005, Verbisky brought this book out called The Island of Silence, which I don't think it ever came out in the English language.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
No, but it came out in Italian and in Spanish. I have made a very in-depth investigation on Verbisky's work, on the documents that he has put forward to verify them, also with other witnesses and stuff. And I mean, we are really in front of a pope who I really thought, like many others, I wasn't the only one, could be a pope of change, who could really do something, you know, to stop these people from their plan. But in reality, I have to admit that in the end, we are all very disappointed because we discovered that this Pope, as Verbisky said, is a great actor. And he is a great actor. There's nothing to say. He's a typical Jesuit. And what he's doing is to stage a big change in front of the people, because, of course, Ratzinger was so involved in all these scandals that at one point, of course, they blackmailed him out of his position and the Jesuits came into power, which represent the intelligence force of the Vatican. As I said, this episode that happened with these two Jesuits that were actually arrested because of Pope Francis. I mean, Pope Francis signed the document saying they were subversives. So he made his own, and then he actually made them laymen, like first ordinary priests. He took them out of the order of the Jesuits immediately, and at that point they were, of course, arrested as soon as he took them out of the order of the Jesuits by the dictatorship, and they were tortured for 6 months. After 6 months, the Vatican managed to take them out. Of these two Jesuits, one became again a Jesuit. The other one never rejoined the Jesuits. I think he just stayed as an ordinary priest. But the interesting thing about what happened is that their declarations on how Pope Francis Bergoglio acted are incredible. I mean, we have a man that didn't have any pity upon these two Jesuits who were actually doing their job in the favelas, in the poor parts of the towns of Argentina, helping the poor. But he, of course, was siding with the fascists. We also show in my book a documentation about Pope Francis' fascist membership in an extreme group at the beginning of the 70s in Argentina. So we are talking here about a pope who has very specific fascist tendencies. And did you know more that the P2, I mean, the dictator at that time, the general who was in charge of Argentina, and all the people in power in Argentina were all P2 members? So, you can check this out. I mean, it was verified also by historians, so you can check it.
Yeah, and the P2 Lodge, the Mother Lodge, would be in Italy, correct?
Of course, okay. In Italy, and in that particular period of time, it was very much interconnected with the Loggia Ecclesia, which basically, the Loggia Ecclesia is the lodges of Freemasonry that operate within the Vatican, the lodges where you have also the clergy that operate in the Vatican. There are supposed to be four of these lodges operating as a lodge, and they're supposed to be directly in contact and under the control and direction of the Duke of Kent, which is himself the cousin of the Queen. So how does all this fit, you would say, in this relationship between Jesuits, Freemasons? Well, it all fits very well.
Because that's a worldwide order.
I mean, it's the new world order. I mean, it's from 1958, the Vatican, let's say, with the election of Papa Roncalli, who was the first Masonic Rosicrucian Pope. There was this sudden change that gave into the beginning of the Second Vatican Council, the opening towards other religions gradually. And in May of this year, we saw for the first time an imam reciting the Quran inside the Vatican. Now, this, of course, it's already something that should make us shake a little bit our heads. But, you could say, okay, if we want to be in a realm of interreligious acceptance, we can do it. They were all in the Vatican Gardens. But nobody, except some people, very few people who know Arab, pointed out on the fact that the closing of this surah of the Quran was dedicated to the fight against all infidels who don't believe in the Quran. Now, to say something like this in front of the Pope, in front of the Jewish head of the Jewish religion, the rabbi, whatever, the Shimon Peres and the whole band, and to actually say that and to get away with it within the Vatican walls, the interesting thing was that when they actually fronted the Vatican about doing this, the Vatican radio immediately intervened. Said, no, it's not like this. But some academics who know very well Arabic, they translated the whole thing and they say they went behind your back, and that's what they said. So there is also not only the financial problem and the gay lobby. In my book, there is also a large part of the book dedicated to the infiltration, the Muslim infiltration of the Vatican. And it's not like this subject is very well known.
No, it's not. And can you touch on that? And it makes sense, especially with the Quran being read in the Vatican for the first time and with those statements made. Can you touch on this? And of course, we have those issues in the Middle East with ISIS, this new Muslim Islam group that the U.S. and we don't seem to do anything about, where we could pretty much bomb them if we wanted to. Can you touch on that?
Sure. What happened was this. I invite all your listeners to maybe go in the archives of what I don't know if it's still going on, but it used to be the investigative journal of Greg Zismansky. Me and Greg, for many years, he was one of the first to pick up on my revelation in 2006. Between 2006 and 2008 in particular, we did a lot of interviews and put together a lot of material. At one point, during one of my trips to the... I was actually going to Turkey at that time. I encountered somebody who was claiming... But he was a guy who represented a very big organization of Muslims, which is the Fethullah Gulen movement. This Fethullah Gulen is actually based in New Jersey, so he's in the U.S. because he can't reside in Turkey, otherwise they will shoot him. But he is totally defended by the CIA because he is an agent of the CIA who has used these schools of Islamic thought that are placed all over the globe for, many years. This was actually, there was also a statement made by the head of the Turkish intelligence who confirmed that basically they were, the CIA used to use his schools to just put some people who had to escape, people who were on the run, agents, you know, like safety houses for the intelligence sometimes even.
Okay.
Apart from being recruiting and indoctrinating, because if you go and study the history of Fethullah Gulen, you know that he is as powerful as Al-Qaeda, but without the weapons, because he's financing Hillary Clinton. And even Bill Clinton talked about him publicly. So, I mean, you can go and verify this. I invite all the listeners to go and verify always my claims.
Well, yeah, there's recent statements here. Sorry to interrupt you. I forget who it was, but it's someone high up in the Obama administration basically stating that America is now an Islamic country.
I would say that what's happening is this, Mo. The final goal is not, as we know, Islam, but it is the universal church to eliminate all religions. But what is happening here is within this context, they are instrumentally using the Islamic religion and their practitioners and the people who are the various leaders, because unfortunately it seems like they are very easily to corrupt because they're all eager to join and being accepted by the Western world. That's the problem, you see?
Okay.
But at the same time, we also saw that once you accept them, their kids rebel and they go and fight with ISIS, which is, of course, a CIA-conducted operation initially to fight Syria. But in any case, they are going into Muslim fundamentalism. So we, as the West, have failed because we have believed that there was an Islamic moderate agenda. It doesn't exist more. If when I was operating within a certain environment, and I even got at one point married with an Islamic woman, and I even have a Muslim child that to this day I haven't seen for many years, I understood the hypocrisy of this religion. And I viewed things which probably I shouldn't have, which really made me think. And one of the things I viewed, especially when it comes to this Fethullah Gulen, which is considered a moderate Muslim, was that during one of these meetings, one of his representatives said that we will raise the flag of Allah on top of the Vatican. Now, this is the same thing that ISIS has stated in July of this year. How is possible that I heard the same thing, I think approximately 6 or 7 years ago, said by a supposed moderate Muslim? What there is moderate about raising the flag of Islam on top of the Vatican? Nothing.
Nothing, correct.
So you see, we were talking about that person in Turkey, which I have met that time. And on the Greg Zismansky show a week later, I stated that this person reported to me that there were 40 cardinals within the Vatican that had converted to Islam. Now, of course, we cannot give in to such allegations without investigating them before putting them on a book. Because,
of course.
But I had done an in-depth investigation in the last few years since what this guy has told me, and especially the source from which he, because he got it from a source, and I didn't give it much weight until the source got killed. And he was a very high-up guy in the Vatican who was the nuncio representative in an area of Turkey, which is very important. So he was one of the main people of the Vatican in Turkey. which is still considered, you have to understand, Turkey is the place where there had been the Council of Nicaea. I mean, you have to understand, Turkey is the place where Christianity is born on the book.
Correct. And they were recently, of course, a Muslim country, and then now they're basically non-denominational, correct? Allegedly,
because they are still very much fundamentalist in their ways. And we can say one thing, that if Turkey hasn't gone all the way into the Islamic fundamentalists, it is because of their past, because of their foundation with Ataturk, who was, of course, a Freemason. And he was, of course, very anti-religious, so he has given this strong base, which, of course, it can be viewed in a positive way and also in a negative way, because also he, for many, he was a Satanist, and many things he did were quite satanic. But at the same time, he stopped the fundamentalism, which was, of course, in the DNA of Turkey. You have to understand that before the Ataturk proclaimed the state of Turkey, it was the Ottoman Empire. And the Ottoman Empire was a caliphate. It was the last caliphate. So what is happening now is actually that, I mean, people like al-Baghdadi and basically the ISIS lot could never proclaim themselves caliphate if there was an existing caliphate. The caliphate was eliminated because it was considered a great problem by the by the Israeli, by the Jews. And at the time there was not Israel, the Jews were still, spread around the globe, but there were many Jews, as traditionally they are, in Turkey, and some of them were behind both Ataturk and also behind von Zumbotendorf, who became the main financier for the beginning of the Nazi party.
Yeah, and in regards to Turkey, they also opened their borders to the Jews when they were being persecuted around the world and let them in there, correct?
Because, nobody knows this, but the last Ottoman Sultan, his wife was actually Jew. And is accused by many Muslims to have facilitated the fall of the empire. Okay? So we can say that this allegation, though, at the beginning, as I said, I didn't take this allegation very seriously, but still, the guy was repeating that this allegation was serious, and I started to see things happening around this, and this whole story. The fact that he said there were 40 cardinals in the Vatican that were actually even reading a specific passage of a book which is not even the Quran, but is the book of his grandson. It's called the Jushan al-Kabir. And basically, this book is said to have some very big power. And the fact that they were in the Vatican, these 40 cardinals apparently were also using the Jushan al-Kabir, it was quite worrying. When this nuncio, apostolic nuncio, you can go and verify this, in 2010, he was killed. He was killed. The guy who actually said to my friend from the Gulen movement, that there were 40 cardinals in the Vatican, which is something, of course, after he said it, I went and reported it, with Greg Szymanski on his show. The news started spreading around the internet. A few people started blogging about it. So maybe, I hope not, but it could have been that they actually eliminated him, because if you actually go and investigate the murder of this subject, and now I'm just finding the name because I have so many names in my head at the moment.
I understand, Leo.
So as I'm writing, I can't remember the names of everybody. But basically what happened was that in the newspapers, many of his close friends, and even clergy, who were his friends, priests, bishops, started asking to have an in-depth investigation, because he was killed by his driver suddenly out of the blue, and the driver himself, when he was interrogated by the court, said simply, "I would have never have done nothing to this guy, but I suddenly didn't have any control over myself." Now, this might sound like just somebody wanting to get out of it, But the thing is that, you know, the biggest attempt to the murder, the biggest, I mean, murder attempt, assassination attempt in history was the Ali Akça one, perpetrated against John Paul II. And he was Turkish. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we are quite used to have these Turkish killers then starting to, you know, saying strange things because they maybe been forced to do, you know, to kill and to act in that way.
Through magic rituals or something from some occult leaders?
Absolutely. Okay. In fact, Ali Akça himself actually said something very interesting in one of his latest books that was released in Turkey. He said that the Muslims are, the fundamentalist Muslims are operating this way because they want to incentivize and accelerate the end of times. It's like rituals and things are done and all these murders and this chopping of heads because the more they do it and the more they think they're close to the end of time scenario.
Okay.
So, it's quite shocking that these words have been said by the guy who was nearly killing John Paul II in at the beginning of the 80s in what was one of the most shocking moments of recent history in the Vatican. The name, yes, was Luigi Padovese. He was the apostolic vicar of Anatolia, and he was killed in 2010. And the case was quickly closed by the Turkish authorities. That gave basically only 6 years to this murderer. Only 6 years. I mean, doesn't it seem a little bit strange?
Yeah, it seems very strange.
I mean, you kill somebody from the Vatican Curia, you know, a high representative of the Vatican, and then you end up just coming out after 6 years. I mean, of course, there is something going on, which is something that we need to know about. In any case, the Vatican infiltration made by the Muslims is much more deeper than that. In my book, I bring up situations which are paradoxical. I mean, I bring up the documentation of a Jesuit who started answering from the website of a fundamentalist Muslim on his website as a special guest. A Jesuit. And it doesn't finish here. This Jesuit, who was one of the main collaborators of John Paul II in the interreligious dialogue, and for many years responsible for the interreligious dialogue of the Jesuits, this guy here is now living in Turkey as a Muslim. Padre Del Loyo, last year, was said to be killed in Syria. He's a Jesuit. But the reality is they never found him. And they will never find him for the meantime. You know why? And I don't want to say this because maybe some will get offended, but, you know, I mean, it's basically time you know these things. Padre Del Loyo, that you can go and see on the news, disappeared last year in Syria, is now with ISIS. If you want to recruit, give a strong spiritual imprint to something that is becoming very powerful like ISIS, you need to have very strong people behind it.
So,
and you know, the Jesuits are the number one intelligence force of the West in some ways. So,
and let's touch on that, the relation between the West, the CIA, and ISIS. These things that we keep hearing, and of course that you're mentioning here. We know that here in the West, there's a lot of different factions of Christianity, as there is in the Jewish religion. And the various different sects of faith, from paganism, Judaism, and all this different things. And then when we go to the East, it's pretty much just Islam. And in Islam, there's various different sects. And then you have the Yazidis, who are completely different religious groups. So it's almost like you have, you know, 10 different sects of the Islamic religion and other groups that aren't part of it. And then now we have ISIS, basically join Islam or die. It's almost as like what the Catholic Church did during, you know, when they had first started, you know, convert to Catholicism or die. Is this an inquisition?
I would say that the level of manipulation that they managed to induct through the Quran was carefully studied, not in the Middle East, but in Langley, Virginia, between 1975 to 1978. The publications were then made available to the imams, to the school teachers of the, you know, the Islamic teachers around the Middle East, Afghanistan. Of course, people like Bin Laden were fighting for the West, and they started to spread around, you know, the Quranic schools in the Middle East. What the CIA did was very simple, together with the Mossad, of course, because they could have never put this plan into place without being completely in league with the Mossad. Remember this, the Mossad in the Middle East is very powerful.
They're the CIA of the Middle East.
They are this, you know, I mean, they are the CIA of Israel. They are the intelligence of Israel, and they are definitely the ones you want to be. You don't want to mess with them, or you don't want to be their enemies if you are in the Middle East, because you're going to get killed. I learned that myself by seeing how they operate in the Middle East, directly in Egypt and other places. These people are the most dangerous agents that there are, the Mossad agents, for sure. What I can say is that they have created, though, they have picked up, it's very easy. If you want to believe what I'm telling you, it's very easy to confirm it. You just go in the Middle East, even now in Egypt or other countries, you put on the TV, and because they always play these old movies from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you will see it yourself. There's no burqas, nobody dressed in Muslim clothing. This rubbish, taken from a fucking history book, was actually...
In the 70s. It was concocted in the 70s, is what you're saying.
It was concocted in the 70s. And the man who inspired the CIA more than others, and inspired people like Michael Aquino, who are, you know, mind control experts and psychological warfare experts. All these people have been working for many years in MK Ultra without really reaching any very great results with the drugs, you know, because initially, just after the war, they thought maybe we can find the ideal drug that will bring somebody to be completely under our control. Okay. So they experimented LSD, they experimented this, they experimented this other. Of course, they also reached some conclusions, and they managed to manipulate the masses of youth, especially in the 60s, towards a certain direction that was, of course, organized. But what happened when they discovered that they could take out from this long-lost tradition, which was the tradition of Hassan-i-Shaba? I don't know if you know about Hassan-i-Shaba?
No.
Hassan-i-Shaba is the man of the mountain of the Ismaili sect of the Ashashins.
Okay.
He's mentioned many times in American literature. By who? By William Burroughs.
Is there a relation to the assassins?
No, they are the assassins.
They are the assassins, okay.
Yeah, Hassan-i-Shaba was the grandmaster of the assassins. It was known as the man of the mountain because their fort was on top of a mountain. And they had devised all kinds of manipulations, initiations, that basically through this initiation you will get completely manipulated in believing that, you know, you had those virgins waiting for you in paradise, the whole show, and you could just go and kill yourself in the name of the Grandmaster and they would be okay. That was the, you know, the ultimate goal, you know, was to create a mind-control individual that didn't have a will of his own, but acted with the will of something greater. When the CIA, of course, they ultimated this project in the Carter period, but it was always with Bush, because Bush was one of the senior operatives who was behind this plan. Bush father, of course.
Yeah, the Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones, of course, and all the rest. But and why all this fascination with Islam? There has been always a big fascination with Islam from occultists. I just want to mention one for all, Aleister Crowley, who converted to Islam just so he could infiltrate and work within the Muslim environment. So, and he knew the Islamic traditions very well, and he actually applied some of his of the Muslim traditions to his own Thelemic religion. And that's why it's called the OTO Caliphate. Also because, of course, Cali, you know, they say it's because of California. But it's also because of Caliph, as Caliphate. In fact, when you get initiated in the Minerval degree of the OTO, still nowadays with the caliphate audio, you take, they take off your black thing, you know, like when you are in Freemason, you know, you get initiated to the light of Freemason, you get initiated to the darkness of the OTO, and you find yourself in front of the Grandmaster of the Assassins inside the tent, a white tent, you know, that is the initiation of the OTO.
Interesting, and they call it the Minerval degree, which would have relationship to the goddess as well.
Yes, I mean, they explain you while you're going, you know, towards the central temple where the initiation happens, that you are going, you know, in the mysteries of Egypt, in the mysteries of ancient Greece, in the mysteries of this and that. But in the end, who you're actually meeting is somebody who resembles basically a fundamentalist Muslim. And if you look at how the Imenus Alpha, the first Grandmaster, McMurphy, the guy who actually brought to California the OTO from Crowley, I mean, brought the OTO, of course, there was already an OTO in California, but he brought it back into life as a big plan that was... of course, made with the CIA, that of course is always there controlling all these sex and esoteric and magical mystery schools. Basically, we can see his photos. He's dressed up with the thing on top of the turban on top of the head, resembling a Muslim. So basically, we can say, of course, the OTO is not a group of terrorists, at least not in the way the ISIS is. They are mind-controlled terrorists, the OTO. Like the Church of Set, the Temple of Set is even more mind-controlled terrorist organization, I would say.
Yeah, and Leo, what is the purpose, do you believe, of all this? At the end, they meet essentially, what is this Muslim gentleman representing the Islamic religion? Is it because they are essentially ruling Freemasonry, or is it to bring in the one-world religion where, hey, you might be a Christian, you might be a Jew, whoever it is, but hey, you're going to accept, you know, this Muslim, this Islam, this brother as your master. Is that what it's a one world religion, or is it Islam is the one world religion?
No, I would say this, that before they arrive to the stage of the one world religion, they want to, of course, eliminate 3/4 of the population of this planet, as we have been saying in other episodes. No, I think that, you know, this is something that we all know. So, I mean, we couldn't eliminate 3/4 of the population of this planet if everybody was getting along just fine and loving each other. No,
there needs to be one big last war, right?
There needs to be one big last war and one big last lie. So the thing is, the Templars historically connected with the Assassins, it's true. And of this specific link, the Esoterists have always worked a lot on this specific link, until also in the 50s in Turkey, under a Templar church, was found a cross with the image of Baphomet, which apparently is the image of Muhammad. Now, the image of Muhammad is for Muslims, of course, an heresy, but in the eyes of the Knights Templars, this will protect them. So the Templars were secretly converted to Islam. Because the Knights Templars, of course, became the inspiration for Freemasonry, it's obvious that within the rites of Freemasonry, many will be tempted to go towards that direction. But apart from this whole Muslim situation, of course, that we find also in the Shriners, they have to do initiations where they have the Quran, they have to, you know, in their temple resemble the Kaaba. Of course, they do it sometimes even in a disrespectful way towards the tradition of, you know, of traditional Muslims. In fact, the Shriners have been kicked out of Mecca a long time ago.
Okay.
So they can't really go back anymore. But going back to the fact that where are we going? We're going towards a parliament of religions in which the Vatican and the Jews want to, of course, as they are the heads, the Zionists and the Vatican and the Jesuits are the heads of this new world order, they want to, of course, prevail over the others, because we are 100% sure, and everybody who is listening to me is 100% sure, that if you let the parliament of religions be born tomorrow, the day after is under the control of the Jesuits and the Zionists. I don't think that even the Islamic or the Buddhist or any other religion will have the strength that they have in organizing themselves. But to actually fight the war that will get us into this turmoil, this struggle that in the Vatican say will last until 2020, what will happen in 2020? Between 2019 and 2020, I show in my book the new plan for the Vatican II, which is a new construction which is already underway. And this plan is based on an ancient site which has been found in the middle of the 90s in Turkey. And so not many people know this. There is a vast documentation that I provide to the people who are reading. And so the plan is there to actually create this Vatican II, which is in the outskirts of Rome. It's not in Rome, because Rome might be destroyed.
Prophecy is Constantinople, which would be in Turkey.
No, it's
okay.
Not even there. It's not even there.
Okay.
I mean, the old temple, which is antediluvian, it's actually in Turkey, towards the borders with Syria.
Correct, and the Pope used to rule from Turkey, modern-day Turkey, correct, before?
Sure. Well, I mean, there was the division between the Eastern and the Western Church, you know. I mean, there was the two churches, no? The Orthodox Church has their base in Constantinople, in Istanbul, traditionally, because what happened was that after the fall of Rome, as an empire, what actually survived was the Vatican, and the Vatican structure has always stayed in Rome, apart from when in history sometimes it went in France for a couple of popes that ended up in France, or you know, they ended up in situations where there was even two popes at the same time, because you know, the anti-popes and all these wars that you know, between. But they managed, Rome managed to keep on the Vatican structure. At the same time, from the year 1000, when they broke between the two churches, Istanbul, Constantinople became the church number two, let's say, the Vatican number two, if you want, of the Orthodox tradition. But we can also say there was a very close link with Turkey, also by Pope Roncalli, for example, the guy who started the Vatican Council, because he was actually, and there is witnesses to that, he was participating to Masonic meetings in Istanbul and was initiated there in Istanbul. So the connection with Turkey is always very strong. We find Turkey to always be in the center of all these international, you know, confrontations.
Is Greece still subject to Turkey, or are they completely independent? What are your thoughts there?
I feel very sorry for Greece. At the same time, I can say that Greece has at the moment is just like Italy. There are countries where we are considered inferior in a way,
gotcha.
Suspendable by the there is a plan. And okay. Have you ever heard of the Kalergi plan?
No.
Okay. In the beginning of last centuries, there was a man born in 1894. He was called Kodun Kalergi. He was an aristocrat, Henrik von Kodun Kalergi. He died in 1972. But this guy, who probably the Americans have never heard about, is one of the main founders of the European Union, as it is. I mean, the idea of Europe united comes from Kalergi. In fact, every year, the leaders of the European Union receive the Konduv Kalergi European Prize. And recently, Angela Merkel received it, for example, another pawns of the Bilderberg. In any case, the Kalergi plan is a secret plan. I mean, Kalergi was a noble connected to the Habsburg family, who had connections, and actually he was related also to the Byzantine family of the Kalergis. Byzantine, always going back to what I said before, not the Byzantine Empire, that, I mean, took on from the moment in which the Roman Empire, as Roman Empire, fall in Rome, for a period until the Muslim takeover, Constantinople was the head of the Roman Empire. Istanbul was the head of the Roman Empire. But in any case, so the nobility that comes from there is also very powerful. He was half Japanese, apart from being half Austrian. He was a diplomat, and he devised a plan for the ethnic genocide of the European people in the 1920s. What does it mean, this? His plan is very detailed, to let more people of African and Muslim descent within Europe in a certain period of time, break the race agenda, and constitute what, I mean, these are his words. I don't want to be taken for the new Adolf Hitler while I'm talking to you, when I'm actually citing somebody else.
Of course, definitely.
I'm citing the Kalergi plan, which you can go on the internet and stuff. The Kalergi plan, okay. So this Kalergi plan is based on an invasion, which is actually happening right now.
And, correct, everywhere.
And Greece is subject to that invasion. That's why you said before, are they ruled by Turkey? No, Greece is ruled by the Bilderberg Club as well as Turkey. Nobody's independent in this game. We are in the New World Order here. I mean, it's like, you know, nobody can actually... since the Troika arrived in Greece, they don't even control their own republic anymore. Do you know that? In recent years. After they have gone bankrupt, and now they can't even pay the pensions this month in Greece.
Yeah, so basically, let's touch on that real quick, briefly and simply so, for the audience.
Just to finish.
Okay, sorry.
Go and check the secret plan by the New World Order called... the Kandu Kalergi plan. Okay.
At Kalergi, C-L-E-R-E.
No, K-A-L-E-R-G-I.
Okay, thanks.
Kalergi. Okay, because this plan is only known within the right-wing circles in Europe. And sometimes, you know, they just accuse the people who talk about the Kalergi plan of being right-wing. It's people like the Golden Dawn of Greece now, the party. I'm talking about the party, Golden Dawn, not the civil society. They, for example, talk a lot about the Kalergi plan. But the Kalergi plan is a reality. This ethnical cleansing invasion, which we have... You know how many people are arriving in Italy every day this summer? Only with little boats? Forget Mexico, man. Forget what's happening down there. That's nothing. We have like between 20,000, 2,000 people every day arriving in Italy. 2,000 people minimum a day. And these just arriving with their little boats, and they have brought with them terrorist infiltration, which has already been proven. They have brought with them Ebola. They have brought with them TBC, which is back on the rise, tuberculosis. I mean, here we are talking about the Kalergi plan being the ethnical genocide of the European people. So why such a guy like Kalergi should have devised something like this, as he was an aristocrat? And why should the European aristocrats endorse this European plan of action? Why? Because Kalergi himself was half Japanese, half everything. He was a mix. He had ideas which were specific to his own, ideology or political religious views that were just in line with this New World Order plan that had to, in any way, be, whatever whatever will happen, happens. He didn't care. He didn't care if people were forced out of their houses, if people were forced out of their jobs, if people will get sick. He said, imagine this, he said, in the end, I mean, remember the Kalergi European Prize is one of the most prestigious prizes. And you know what this guy said?
What?
In the end, here in Europe, we have to look like Egyptians because we have to crossbreed with the Africans and look like Egyptians. Because we crossbreed with the Arabs, the Africans, and we end up looking like Egyptians. But he didn't say that that had to be only for Italy. That is the plan for the whole of Europe. So,
That essentially, when you say that, I think of the Spanish. I think of almost my wife, who comes from that background and who comes from Mexico. And I share DNA with. You know, if you look back east, you know, I'm here in the West, I have blonde hair, blue eyes, but I know I have cousins who are of the Islamic religion that are of brown skin, brown eyes, and so forth. So the idea is to mix us all so we don't have that connection to our original racial heritage and roots, to where we're all kind of part of the same family.
Yes, which, I mean, on the long run, You know, I mean, it could even be a positive thing, you know. I mean, if everybody's the same, nobody will argue with each other anymore. But be sure that while these people are devising a plan like this for the masses, they are always in search of their own ideal, which is completely the opposite. Like the, for example, blonde Aryan ideal of the Scandinavian race, or other ideals that, you know, they portray in the elite. So, I mean, we have to be a little bit careful, because these people are very easy to make our lives hell and mix it all up so we can, you know, basically destroy our cultures. Now, I'm not racist. I'm not against other people's religions. I don't necessarily think that anybody has the wrong ideas. Each one has their own, and it's their own, you know, it's no problem. But, of course, if we destroy the ethnicity of a nation, of course, then we will all have McDonald's, we will all have 7-Eleven, we will all have those products that will be absorbed more easily than by the masses of people that will have lost their traditions, the way of making their salsiccia, the sausage, their pasta, their fig, or in Spain their special salami, or in another country some other particularity, all the cheeses of France. These are things that, on the long run, these people of the New World Order want to destroy.
So if you look at America, America is already there. We're basically what you have described over the last 200 years has been in the process here in America. We have lost touch with our heritage.
It's different. Why? It's very different. Because America is the land of the free and the brave that accepted a change in their life and went on the other side of the Atlantic. Still, nowadays, people go to America in search of something, in hope of something, okay? Here in Europe, the people, and if I go out of the door, there are families, people, and situations that have been there for thousands of years. America didn't even exist, okay? Correct. So there is restaurants in Italy that are 1,000 years old, okay, they're older than America. So here we are talking about destroying countries and ethnicities that have been here from the time of ancient Rome. Here we are talking about a really vicious plan to destroy the tradition of people who are not infringing on other people. Because first of all, the USA has a bad karma from the start, simply because you eliminated the American Indians. So America is started with a bad karma. They are making up for it. Gradually, they're going to have to work a lot on their karma in the centuries to come, because what they did is is completely a sin towards the universal brotherhood and the creation of mankind, because eliminating populations is not we are back to the invasion and the ethnical cleansing. What you did, let's say this, that what the Americans did is different, because they wanted to, and of course, nobody in America is an American, apart from the American Indians.
True.
And where are the American Indians?
I believe they were Phoenician, but who knows?
The problem is, where are the American Indians? There's not an American Indian as a president.
Oh, they have their reservations.
They're put on the margins of society. So I mean, do Europeans want to end up like American Indians? I mean, do we want to end up on some reserve here?
Well,
it's going to end up being that way if we start bringing in thousands and thousands of Muslims every day, black people, but not in the way it was in the U.S.
So the difference
in the
here...
In the U.S., you brought black people because you enslaved them.
Correct.
You have a karma.
So it was non-free will. The difference between the plan with the European Union is that is based on free will, even though they're purposely being brought there. The mixture of these cultures, whether they have sex, whether they take one as a wife, will be free will, as opposed to them just coming in there with hatchets and cutting off everybody's head of Italians who have been there. So it's going to be a free will mixture of these people, as opposed to what America did was by force, was by the sword. correct?
But the problem actually here is even larger, because they are now going around with machetes, black people going crazy and cutting the heads of Italian. And it's not happened once. It's already happened two times in the last year.
Okay.
I mean, we are talking about people that come directly out of the jungle and arrive in a civilized society. We are not talking about people that arrived with some ships two or three centuries ago and have adapted in the course of two or three centuries, because we all adapt.
Correct.
You know, we all, they are as much American, the black people, as you are American. You know, as I could be American one day. But we are, you know, America is a country born of new civilization, of a new civilization coming together with people of different origins. That is, and also the way it's been structured, dividing very much what is religion from what is the state, so there is not a religion that can prevail over the other, is very right. I mean, at least this was the original idea. Then, of course, behind the scene, we know very well that the Christian fundamentalists have their own agenda. We know that the Muslims have their own agenda in the U.S. But I'm saying the general idea is that religion and state are separated. Here in Europe, the situation is very different. I mean, they arrive in Italy. They are arriving in what is basically, after Israel, the home of Christianity. You know, St. Peter and the Vatican. I mean,
correct.
And you, and if you bring here million Muslims, they want to, of course. I mean, it would be like us finally being able to visit Mecca, or to be doing whatever we wanted in Saudi Arabia or in any other country in the Middle East. I would like to have a party in Medina. I would like to be to bring my Western civilization and my big cross with me, and maybe open a big church in front of Mecca. If they want to open their mosque, as they are doing here in Europe, why don't we open also church in Mecca? The thing is that people of Muslim origins are not really accepting this structure of universal brotherhood, which is portrayed by the New World Order.
So
they never accept it.
Why is there a difference? Why is there a difference where there they are racist? Where there, if you were not part of their religion, you are condemned, you are even killed, you are even hanged, and then there's no race mixing. But when it comes to the West, a big enchilada, everybody's mixing, all the religion, everybody accepts everybody. It's this dual standard from the East to the West.
Where, sorry, when you said everybody accept each other, where?
Well,
West. The problem is this, fundamentally. And I tell you, the problem is very easy, and that's why we will lose this war, and that's why we already lost this war. Nobody is a real Christian. Nobody believes really in Christianity.
Correct. They may claim they are one, but they don't walk the walk. Correct.
Okay. Then there is also another big difficulty that we have. Up until five centuries ago, like the jihad, we had the jihad in Sicily for 200 or 300 years against the Muslims. I mean, jihad in Italy ended up in the 15th century, I think. I mean, so we had a few centuries of jihad in Italy. They were arriving, but of course, they were arriving in Italy five centuries ago. They would get their head chopped off. Just as they chop off our head, there would be a Christian guy, a knight, arriving there with his sword, saying, are you a Shiite? Are you a Sunni? Yeah. Boom. Chedha. Boom. You accept Jesus? No. Boom. I'm not saying that one is better than the other. Eh? For God's sake, I don't want to be misunderstood, because some people will think that I am... No.
No, you're just repeating history.
I'm just saying, if we want to win this war, then we have to be as fanatical as them. But I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening. Why? Because our Christianity is a castrated Christianity, the fruit of sin. In the Vatican, there's a bunch of queers who even convert to the Muslim religion. I don't think that we can manage to fight Islam. I really don't think. It's very sad to say that, because it means that I'm going to have to leave Europe maximum in 2020, I calculated, because after that it would be impossible to live in Europe, because the Muslim invasion will have taken on such an aggressive stand that the civil wars will start spreading in some regions of Europe. So, I mean, here we are in a situation, I mean, the news doesn't report this in America, but here we have whole towns that are rioting with the people of Islamic ethnicity that are arriving illegally with their boats. And what there is some, you know, I mean, riots.
What does the North play in this? You know, you have Russia, which is primarily 96% Christian. You have the Russian Orthodox Church. You have a marriage of religion and state between the Russian Orthodox Church and, of course, government there. What is going to happen in the North with Putin? Is he just going to ignore this and let the Muslims just do everything? Or what do you see them doing?
I have, as you know, a very big experience in Russia. I've been working very much in Russia. I am a friend of Russia, and I will always stay a friend of Russia. Whatever happens, I want people to know that, because they were probably the first country on earth to treat me in a way that no other country treated me. So I have a great gratitude towards Russia. One of the things also that I witnessed myself in Russia, they don't tolerate Muslims. In a way, I mean, not tolerating means that if the Muslims go out of their range of what is acceptable, because we can be Muslim, you know, no problem, go around, do our Quran, do our prayers, and just, you know, mind their own business. And that's accepted. But if you start showing your, you know, you want to take over the country, well, Russia is the last place on earth, because they're going to kill you after 2 minutes. Russia is a place where you have right-wingers of both left-wing and right-wing, Bolsheviks, that will kill a Muslim in 2 seconds. I mean, these are people who do like night patrols, you know, like private citizens who go around patrolling the streets and beating up Muslim, blacks, anybody. You know, I mean, Russia is a very strict country towards this kind of reality. That's why CIA has tried to infiltrate and many times Russia politically never managed creating a revolution against the central power of the Kremlin, never managed. Has also tried to finance the terrorism on the borders with the Al-Qaeda kind of covens, as you know, no? In places just on the borders, you know, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, all these countries that are on the borders also of the Federation that are of Muslim religion have been used to try to operate some chaos within the Russian Federation. They never managed. I mean, they tried, eh? They really tried. I mean, the Western powers, and I saw them myself, invested money in recruiting fundamentalists to send to fight Russia.
And where do they play in this as far as the intelligence community, the KGB, which I believe is the FSB now? Where do they play into this? Have they infiltrated anywhere, the Vatican, America, or are they just staying where they're at and watching things?
What are your thoughts Russia? There?
Russia, correct.
Russia has infiltrated the West a long time ago at the time of the Soviet Union. Russia has an intelligence structure which is, of course, very powerful. And I mean, all this show that we are seeing in the last few days with Obama, NATO, blim, boom. I just want to tell you one thing. For example, today there is the NATO meeting with Obama and all the members of NATO that are giving their own speech on how to relate with both ISIS threat and also the Russian threat. And I must say that I saw some very funny statements and things because, of course, after, I mean, they spoke with Russia, most European countries understood that if they don't want to suffer the biggest crisis ever, and it's not a question of having, because we already have missiles pointed at a few cities here in Europe that can be wiped out in a second. No, no. The crisis is much more simple. Russians detain most of the gas that we power that is used for cooking, for heating. So if we don't want to suffer the worst cold next winter, we have to stay with Russia. Russia can just turn off, you know, the control systems from headquarters, and we, basically, our countries in Europe will stop. And the fact that the European Union has now given a lot of companies this ultimatum to stop all their activities of business with Russia is going to send into bankrupt companies, not only here in Italy, no, no, also in that country which is ruining all the other countries, which is Germany. Because this Kalergi plan, of course, he was an Austrian. And who was the most famous Austrian of all time? Adolf Hitler. And who is leading the Bilderberg Kalergi asset plan? Angela Merkel, the Bilderberg Club, the Queen of the Netherlands. The father was Prince Bernhard, the founder of the Bilderberg, who was a Nazi. these people are Nazis. Let's put it in our heads, guys. I mean, when you understand that, you have understood the philosophy of the New World Order. They camouflage themselves in a way that it makes us look like we are the conspirators. You know, we talk about conspiracy, so we are the mad ones. We are the ones on the fringe with our alternative media information. What they, of course, they have the media. They have the media that exactly works for them at all times with their agents. Those journalists that we have in the main media, from CNN on the left side to Fox on the right side to all the others, ABC, NBC, all, they are all controlled by a system that will not say one word out of place. So what are they? I mean, I ask people, why are they still watching these idiots? Why are they still believing that ISIS is a threat? ISIS is no more than a threat than China or many other countries that have not so good intentions. And I mean, of course, ISIS is a creation of the CIA, that they created it because they wanted to fight Assad in Syria. It went out of hand. Of course, if you give power to some people... There is a lot of people from the U.S. Army, by the way. I even have a photo of one of them who are inside ISIS. You know that?
I've seen that picture. Is that the one with the tattoo of an army battalion on his hand, on
sure,
his arm?
Sure.
Okay, gotcha.
But also there is an organization, an institute for intelligence and security called ISIS, which operate in Iraq also, which is a U.S. organization.
Yeah, and is that why, like, you'll hear the Obama administration and President Obama, they never say ISIS, they'll say ISIL or ICE, but they'll never say ISIS, because they don't want to tie the two together.
They don't want to tie the two together, but at the same time, you know, abroad, we all call it ISIS. And ISIS is ISIS as the goddess ISIS. It has always been very clear that the Muslim religion is linked to the ISIS religion, because ISIS is the moon, no? And what is the symbol of Islam, if
the
not
crescent,
the moon?
The crescent moon.
Sure.
You have the
black
moon.
On the
moon.
Other side, the Christian faith is a faith, is a solar faith, is a faith from the sun god, that originates from a sun cult. So these are the main differences between the two. I think that the problem is that most people these days, due to their ignorance, get manipulated. And the ones who start awakening a little bit to such truths that we are discussing today, they make a living at that point because they know more than the other, so they can manipulate the other. But they want to join the New World Order asset. A lot of people that even come and ask for my friendship on Facebook every day, they want to join. They don't understand that we are fighting here, this enemy. No, they want to join it. Like, you know, people, I went, for example, in Italy on TV talking about the influence of the Illuminati on the music industry, and suddenly I was invaded by requests of people who were asking me how they could meet some producer who was a member of the Illuminati to become a big pop star. People are insane, man. This is just out of order. So unfortunately, I see the situation here. It's deteriorating. ISIS, of course, is a threat that is being created for the reason where many other threats have been created. They need to sell weapons. Now, Italy has just sent a bunch of weapons to the Kurds who need to fight ISIS. Do you think these weapons are new?
No.
No, they're secondhand, and some of them are Soviet-made. All the weapons that have been confiscated from the mafia, that have been laying around for decades, that were non-used, have been given for a modest little price, paid, of course, by us in the end, with our taxes, to the Kurdish, who, by the way, happened to just a few years ago, the biggest terrorist of the Turkish nation, who is a NATO ally. So here we are talking about feeding people with weapons, like ISIS. ISIS was fed. If you go, I invite everybody who's listening now, just go back to when this war started with Syria, okay? And you will find, because some clever CIA and other intelligence also are trying to clear the internet out of this information. But you will find that ISIS financing and weapons were being sent by us. Us being Europe, us being America. So we fed them, and then what? Once we feed them, after we want to kill them, it always happens this way, Mo. Who is the next one? I don't know. I mean, it's possible that now, you know, so now the next one's the biggest enemy up until U.S. was out of Iraq was a guy all dressed in black who was looking very much like the guy from ISIS, but he was a Shiite because at the time they needed to demonize the Shiites. Because it was useful to demonize the Shiites in that moment of time. So, you know, they created this enemy in the U.S. Oh, my God, oh, this guy. Because the Shiites, of course, have always been very powerful in Iraq. So to actually see the Shiites being considered like poor victims of ISIS, I'm shaking my head. I'm thinking like some propaganda is really going on, man. Because Shiites are no one to mess up with. And I don't believe anything that is said at the moment on the Shiites being persecuted in Iraq. Because, if really ISIS is persecuting the Shiites, Iran will intervene, which is a totally 100% Shiite country, and will probably invade them themselves. So this is a whole thing set up for like Hollywood, you know, with the stunts which are portrayed every week. As the guy cut his head, did he didn't cut his head, what kind of background there is. They have proven over and over again that it's a fucking show. And people are still feeding into it. People are calling me saying, oh, are you worried about ISIS? Yeah, man, I can't sleep at night because of ISIS. Couldn't care less about ISIS. I really couldn't care less about ISIS. I have been saying these things about Muslims years ago. The fact that if you go and search, probably you will still find, when I was warning people, these people want to raise the flag of Islam on the Vatican. And that's what the head of ISIS has stated in July, when he was doing his major recruiting from Mosul. So, you know, McCain, he created ISIS. And Fidel Castro is probably the only guy who is, in this moment of time, the only guy who is saying the truth here.
What's going to happen?
The courage, because you heard what Fidel Castro said about who founded ISIS.
No, what
have you heard of it?
No.
He said it was founded by McCain and by Mossad. Just go and search. It's in the main news and all over Europe, but in America nobody's reporting it because, of course, you are still in the censorship against Fidel Castro.
What's going to happen here in America on the shores here? Are we always going to be kept in like a little bubble so we could be used as soldiers and in media and little, you know, Hollywood puppets to be on the stage? Or is there going to be catastrophe hitting our shores? What is your theory there?
Well, unfortunately, we have seen what happened lately with the riots that happened. It was in Louisiana, no?
Missouri, Ferguson, Missouri. Correct.
Missouri. Yeah, Ferguson. And basically, Ferguson, Missouri is just like the tip of an iceberg of a big problem that the U.S. has, which is, of course, the fact that the elite is ruling and is not really making an effort to integrate everybody in their wealth. Okay? So large parts of American societies are left out. I mean, I have witnessed myself this in my last visit to the U.S. I mean, people, there is many poor people in the streets, many more than they used to be and much more than they are here in the streets of Europe.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's really sad to see this kind of situation in the U.S. But the fact that the people that are coming back of the war, people that have, they don't have any more a house because of maybe they have divorces one too many times or whatever, they end up in the streets, is absolutely impossible to agree with a country like America being so rich and so powerful and then having so much poverty within their midst. Understand? So I think that the big problem is that at one point they would like to implement martial law. Like you saw yourself there in Ferguson, you know, in those days, what they were doing, you know? Correct. They were arriving. I mean, but it was even there, it was a big staged show. Because they even killed that poor chap. I mean, not the first guy who was killed, the second one, no? Who was just killed at close range. He lifted his hands and he didn't have any weapons and he just went to the police car and they just... I mean, these kind of images show the brutality and the fascism of the U.S. in, you know, in wanting to operate in a way that is absolutely unacceptable, you know? Because it was very easy to use just... how you call it? A stun gun? One of those, you know, the ones that the electric...
Yeah, exactly, a stun gun.
How you call it? A stun gun? You know, you can just use that and send him out, you know. So why do we want to shoot the guy? I mean, so, of course, this is to...
To place fear in the American people?
To place a fear in the American people, at the same time... to create a little bit of news and a bit of chaos in a period in which maybe there is something else going on in another part of the world which didn't need to be, you know, so much brought forward in the American media. So, I mean, you have to always put into account that the American media are usually used for these projects of manipulation. So, I think that the white minority, the white minority and the elite that has joined them, which has people also like Obama, mixed race, and also some black people, no? Like the big black leaders.
Correct, yeah.
Jesse Jackson stuff.
Yeah, Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson.
Okay, these people are all part of the same cabal. These people are evil. These people, in the end, will... live in their own privileged paradise surrounded by security forces, and they will not care if the rest of, you know, if whole parts of cities, there is no security guaranteed any longer. So I'm pretty sure that probably in 10 years from now, in some cities in the USA, it will not be possible to go out, for example, after midnight. It will be like a standard procedure.
And you see a worldwide war happening and possibly another draft in the military happening in many countries if there is a world war?
Absolutely. I mean, the world war is already in place. Even Pope Francis himself had to admit it. 2 weeks ago on his journey while he was coming back from Korea, he stated that we are in a third world war scenario. But this third world scenario is, of course, a war made of many little wars, no? That form and shape up a great big one.
Correct. They just haven't announced it yet.
I think really more that after the Pope's announcement, we have really had like an officiality to the whole thing. If a Pope talks about World War III, I mean, it's a serious thing. It's not like the man in the street, me and you, saying, oh, we are in World War III. You understand?
Correct.
Here we're talking about the head of state. We're talking about somebody who is very powerful.
The head of a billion Christians.
Head of a billion Christians who said we are in this war. One thing that I criticize very much Pope Francis for doing the wrong thing, which was going to Korea and basically waste his time with Korean pop stars for some idiotic dinners. While instead, if he was the real Francis, like the Francis of tradition, no? What did the real Francis do? He went to stipulate a treaty with the head of the Islamic back in the days. He went himself directly in the Middle East because he was a man of courage. Instead, of course, this Pope Francis, apart from stating, yes, I will go and saying it like a propaganda stunt, I will go to the Middle East now, you know, he will never do that. Of course he will never do that. They don't have the security that they can guarantee the Pope going down there. When the Pope went there in Israel, it was like... the plan was being set in motion. And from there on, things just got worse. Didn't you see?
Yeah, it progressed very, very rapidly after that. I agree.
I mean, I was telling you in my previous interview that there might be the possibility of doing something in Israel that could really save us. Okay? Unfortunately, they didn't do that. They really didn't do that. Instead, him and the Queen in April ended up having a meeting, because also we have the Queen of England in all this. You understand?
Yes.
And the Queen of England is a very powerful reality. And of course, I mean, the Queen of England, together with the Pope, met in April for many reasons. Amongst this, also the upcoming crisis, both in the Middle East and in Ukraine. So, I mean, we have now a very much end of times scenario for real, but end of times. I don't see it really as a negative situation because of one thing. Maybe it's only a personal view. Take this as a personal view.
Sure.
But I think that the mediocrity of this civilization and the way they have... The way they have basically ruined this civilization. They have given the wrong values. I mean, what is the new value? The twerking dance of some. I mean, it's really. No. I mean,
it's satanic values.
How big is the ass of Kim Kardashian? Or how this is outrageous, man.
Yes.
I mean, the values of these societies are so low. It's so low that make me think, well, I don't know, man. I mean, if all this goes to hell, let it be. Okay, because I'm really not gonna miss that much. Because the level of the civilization is so low that we are not gonna lose that much. Of course, when you have a situation like this, it's very easy for people who promise to conquer lands and to behave like thugs, like ISIS, to implement even better their plan of action, like many other thugs around the world, no?
Correct.
Because if I give you the ammunition, I give you a nice $2,000-$3,000 machine gun, and I say, welcome in the club, and you can shoot whoever you want, rape whoever you want, and kill whoever you want. That sounds a dream for many people these days, who have the wrong values already in their head. And then maybe, you know, with this Islamic call, figure out they might, you know, end up having a better life. Watch, for example, who is the guy who actually killed the journalist? Who is John the Beatle? He's an ex-rapper from the UK, a hip-hopper, a guy who used to make rap music. Okay, you can find his video with his rap. Have you seen, no?
The recent beheading by the ISIS member, the guy was from Britain, a British rapper, right? And he it was a U.S. journalist he beheaded on YouTube, allegedly.
Yeah, but okay. I mean, it's very easy to manipulate a British rapper from the ghetto of, I don't know, Southampton, London, Birmingham, some shitty place in some ghetto place, no? It's very easy to manipulate it because these people now... Or even a guy like him, who wasn't even a poor guy. He had a million pound house. He was living quite well and everything. Because they are kind of searching some values they can't find. And of course, the superficiality that this culture of hip-hop, rap and all this. That's why I made a book based on all this, which includes also... even before I heard about John the Rapper, included also a part dedicated to Ashani Sabah and to the influence that in pop, even in pop culture, certain myths had in forging the future terrorist. You understand?
Yeah.
So now the future terrorist is somebody that could be a next door neighbor who is just he's maybe bored because he had one too many drugs, one too many cars, one too many this, and he wants to try a new trail. Let's go and kill a few people in the Middle East. You know, I mean, that's it. But also, let's be part of something that gives them an identity, which now they don't have in the Western world. Because in a civilization like the one we have now, that is basically becoming communistic in its approach, everything needs to be leveled, you know? We can't go above anybody with something special. We have to be all catalogable, you know, what kind of person are you? And then you find yourself having this kind of publicity on YouTube, this kind of publicity on Google, this kind of publicity on Facebook, because they identify you, okay? Mm-hmm. So you are a product for them too, you know, somebody who needs to be fed with other products. And so this civilization with all these wrong values, radical Islam definitely can have a very strong imprint. But as I said, this is the first part of implementing a much larger plan. So even Islam that will arrive to a point in having probably even the illusion of taking over the planet, because it will happen at one point that they will have this kind of illusion. Everything will be taken from them the moment in which the real plan of the, you know, the real identity of the new world order is revealed, which is not Muslim, which is not Christian, is not anything. It's simply and purely satanic, Luciferian, atheistic in nature, and to be at that point their own gods, no? And I think that it's very convenient for them to being used. And even in the Islamic faith, you actually find traces of this in their own books, if you read, that in the end of times, you know, they will follow, you know, like Lucifer, they will follow Iblis, they will follow the evil, but then they will be left, you know, like idiots, because Iblis will turn around and say, it was just a trick. And I don't believe in you, or I don't believe who you are. So I kind of start to believe that al-Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, is actually a Jew, because a lot of people have showed pictures of him when he was supposedly a Mossad agent. What does that mean? It means that the Jews have found a great way to create a lot of chaos and continue implementing their plan of action in the Middle East, which is, of course, to stay in the occupied territories, keep the strength of Israel. They have, you saw what they did. They just acted like Nazis for a whole month. They kidnapped three of their own, made them disappear. And then after that, with that excuse, they killed many, many innocent people. And this will go on more until more people will listen what me and you are talking about today.
Yeah, and so,
which is about awareness, is about becoming knowledgeable about things before taking such radical actions. Of course, you know, if we are many and if we have the right ideas, we might be able to change something. Though it's extremely difficult in this kind of society.
It is, and what you're saying, basically, what your theory is that we're coming to an end time scenario, and your beliefs are that this civilization that we have now, because it's been corrupted, it's so dirty and filthy that it needs to be leveled, it needs to be destroyed. And again, this is your theory. And then you also have...
The thing is not only my theory. Unfortunately, I, as you know, come from a background within the secret society. So I am telling you also the way they have always been thinking within the secret society. At one point, you know, we will have to level everything, because if people continue to feed in ignorance and superstition, they will continue to be victims of their own ignorance and superstition. So it's sad to see that in the year 2014, we have not learned from our mistakes of 100 years ago. But we have the eventual start of another world war, just like it was 100 years ago, led by the desperation, this and that. But everything is being manipulated, because the economic crisis is being manipulated, the religious fanatics and all that are being manipulated. So everything is actually controlled by some people who are making a lot of money with all this crisis. They continue to make a lot of money. I don't know how they can live with themselves. I don't know how they can carry themselves every day, because really, when you have such a negative karma, I personally wouldn't be able to even get out of bed. But these people continue, like Henry Kissinger, like David Rockefeller, like Pope Francis, like Pope Ratzinger, even worse, or the Adolf Nicholas, Hans Kovenbach, the Warburg family, the Rothschilds, all these people continue to make money because they don't have a soul. They belong to the devil. They belong to matter. We don't have to be religious here. We can talk, relate the devil to pure materialism. They are pure materialistic people. They don't have a spirit. That is we don't have to be like them. We can cut out for ourselves a better life by trying to stay out of their, you know, control traps, no? That meaning the internet or the TV, or some things on the internet, of course. Because even Facebook is an egregore. Even Facebook is fed by our energies. And it's not a question only of money. It's much more that leads Zuckerberg to do Facebook. It's a question of control. It's a question of control because it fits directly into the work that after is done by the NSA, you know. So yeah, he has constructed a structure which is basically an intelligence structure.
Well, yeah, and if you look at, you know, they call it the World Wide Web. The last time I checked, you don't surf a web. You actually get caught in it, and it was created by the U.S. military. And I know we've been on this interview for quite some time now. Would you like to talk a little bit about your order? I have a lot of people that are consulting me. They've seen the videos. Yes. They've listened to our podcast, and they're wanting to join and be involved. Can you talk to them a little bit, the audience out there, and give them some education?
Sure. What we will be doing soon in the next... first of all, I noticed one thing when I came to America, that it would have been difficult for me to actually conduct myself with this project in the U.S. if they didn't have my own publications and my books first, because the Trilogy of the Illuminati is actually a textbook of my order. It gives not only the information to the outside reader, but also at a different level to the inside reader that understands about... there is different levels of interpretation in these books. Plus, there is a range of instructions, books, secret documents that will be given to all my members in the U.S. also, but, of course, need to be translated, as we said, no? When we had our own meeting, Mo. So what happens is this, that it's very difficult to do this when you are one only person, okay? And you don't have a professional structure that can help you out. We are trying to do that, but because I don't want, you know, to have people that then want to take advantage of things, because they have to understand that, you know, this is something that we do for our own culture, for growing our own self, no? It's not done for some materialistic interest.
Correct.
So I find very difficult at times relating with people when they are very materialistic. And in the U.S., unfortunately, we have a lot of materialistic people, okay? Not that we don't have them also here in Europe, but we have them a lot in the U.S., people that want to take advantage maybe of the esoteric teachings, the secret. So they make money. Okay. So what we have to avoid is that. But I think that the bases are there. The right people to conduct this project are being found. And amongst them, I'm glad to say, there is also you yourself, because we have had a great meeting, even if it was only, you know, a one-time opportunity. But it gave us already an idea of what can be done and what can't be done. Because, as I said, once my publications, my books, will be in the shops, in the library, everywhere in the U.S., like in other countries of English-speaking countries, I will get also, finally, those people who maybe now are a little bit skeptic, because, of course, you know, if you only know Leo Zagami by meeting him through the internet, you might have their own perception. When they will actually read the books, study the teachings and the stuff, they will have a more clear perspective, and that's why... For the moment, we have to have a little bit of patience that I complete the work of translation of, and also the work of translation of all the courses that are given within the order, which I'm going to do in the next few months. and then prepare everything, also with your help and the help of others, so we can lay the basis for an order that wants to bring knowledge, light, and awareness to the people who are interested. Only to the people who are interested, not the curious. Remember this more. There is a lot of people who are curious. They don't want to join an order because they are genuine, but because they are curious. And that's something we have to avoid. Because curiosity
Killed the cat.
Yeah. Killed the cat, but maybe right. Didn't kill only the cat. So, I mean, I don't have time to waste. You don't have time to waste. We are issuing now here a very serious situation whereby we have in Europe now, in the next weeks, we have some meetings of my order to just see where we are. Because also, you know, with what is happening at the worldwide level, we have to assess a little bit our intention, our plan, and what we want to actually do, you know?
Correct.
But my plan is from next year in the U.S. to really start something special. And I think that we can do it. I think that there is a lot of people, like you said, that are eager, no? That want something more, I think. I mean, this is what I understood also from what you said before, no?
Yeah, definitely. And what you're saying, just to quickly interrupt you, is that you don't want just a bunch of joiners or people that are curious. You want actual doers, people that are spreading light and truth and are active, not just people sitting Absolutely. On the sidelines, people that could bring...
And also not people with other intentions that come there with their secondary intention, which is maybe to do this business, this other, or this other thing. So, I mean, you have to take into account all this. Once you find the right people, there might not be many, but the few you find, you really cherish them because they are the ones on which you can build this structure. And the structure that we have will be great because we have the material to construct the structure. But as I said, it will take some time and some organization, especially in the translation of the work, on the actual structuring the organization. Also in the U.S., I have taken some time in the last couple of months also to see the laws of the various states in regards to secret societies and stuff, because, of course, we want to be legitimate also when we are, you know, operating in the various states in the U.S.
And you have also to because operate with the rule of law, correct.
You know, there is like some states that, for example, if you are more than 12 or more than 19, you have a secret society. If you are less than that number, you are not.
Okay.
Okay. So, there is all kinds of laws and stuff. So, I mean, the thing is that we are, of course, an order, a secret society that wants to do their business in a very reserved manner, but we're not conspiring against the laws of the state or against any states or against any person or thing. We are just doing this in a very reserved manner because we think that in this way we can grow without being disturbed by the people who will be just coming there to disturb our energies, no?
Yeah, correct.
And once we have this clear picture. Now, my publications, you see, I have this. This is the project, and it's going on while I'm talking to you. Now I'm finishing in the next couple of weeks the translation of this book. As I said, this is the last. It's called Pope Francis, the Last Pope? ? Then there is the trilogy, which is very important also to us as an order. Okay, because that is not only a book for the reader, ordinary reader, but like many of Crowley's writings, they were also books for the order. Okay?
Okay.
Or many other, you know. So that trilogy is very important because our members in Italy have all read it, like our members in other countries, and it's about time that it comes out in the English language.
And you then see that coming in the next year that'll happen?
No, it's all been planned already. Okay. We have already, I have worked very much in the last few months, and that's why also me and you have not been so much in touch, because I have been sorting out the distribution of my books, the right publisher. The right publisher had to have the approval of the distribution, and we have one of the biggest distributions in the U.S. So that is already something. And the plan is that after the March-April release of this book here, there will be the volume one of the trilogy released instead in September-October of next year. These are already scheduled, so they are scheduled publications. Then there will be volume two and three coming back in 2016. And in 2017, to complete all this, there will be also my more esoteric book, which is The Invisible Master. And this book here will be released in 2017. So we have this plan of action. And at the same time, I'm gonna start working on the translation of the teachings. You know, it's like small booklets of maybe 2, 3, 4 pages, 5, 10, that need to be translated. And so we will, together with you and all the other people involved in the U.S. from the order, we will start working on that, like I said, the last time we met.
Correct. Gradually. Putting those on a website or something for the public, correct?
First of all, we have to make them for the member, for our own internal, these are what I'm saying, the teachings. You know, that are exclusive to our thing. Then we have the public realm also that we want to touch. And a restructuring, of course, like we said before, also of the websites and all that, which is also very important. I think that by next year we will have, for those in the U.S. who are interested in joining something that gives them something, okay, because it's pointless to join something that can't offer you anything really consistent, no?
Correct.
If I invite a whole bunch of people to join an order and then all our material is in the Italian language, unfortunately, I don't know how much it's going to work. You understand?
Yeah.
So it is a very big limitation, the language barrier, but we are trying slowly to overcome that. And this is very important, as I said, because the trilogy contains documentation and material which is used in our order in Europe that needs to be understood in the proper way by the order initiate that at that point knows exactly, like you said right at the beginning of this interview, what is that makes a dark Illuminati and what makes a real Illuminati, a bringer of real light and knowledge to the people. And how all the structure works and how it operates and all the various levels and the teachings and the history. This is very important and it needs, of course, to be defined with this publication. So I'm very glad to CCC Publishing in San Francisco for having the courage to actually take on board this whole project, which is a very big project for a small publishing company. Even if they found very good distribution.
Great, Leon. Thank you for touching on that. This has been a great conversation. And I want to ask you, for the audience out there, I'm probably not going to talk to you again for a couple months before we have another interview. Do you have any advice for those people out there that like what you have to say? They're becoming a little fearful of all the events that are happening around the world. What is your advice to those people, those brothers and sisters of the light out there?
As I said, we have to make sure that, first of all, we ourselves don't reflect the negativity that is in place in this moment, coming from the TV, coming from the media of all kinds, the internet, because this negativity will then influence us in a bad way. So first of all, let's leave it out of our life. Not that these problems are going to disappear. Actually, we have to be aware of them. But we have to be really aware of what is moving these problems from behind the scenes, not just the surface, not be there, watching those idiots on Fox or on CNN or on any other kind of media that just want us to stand by their own political agenda, which is always usually the same. And it's all being made behind closed doors in such a, there is no democracy. It doesn't exist. It's a show. It's such a show that actually I think the U.S. is very clever compared to Italy, because in Italy, to actually bring forward this show, we have something like 700 parliament members with hundreds of millions spent in money. In America, you know that you only have a few senators, how many, one for each state. I don't know how it works now. I mean, yeah. You have many less than we have here in Italy. For a little country like us, we have more politicians. We have like three or four times as many politicians as you have, and we pay them. I mean, it's a scandal. But because politics is a show, we should just at one point reveal the great scam. Reveal the great scam to the masses, and then at that point you will say, Leo, but if we eliminate the great scam for the masses, what are you going to substitute it with? That is something that we can find in Tommaso Campanella, City of the Sun, something that is a little bit more esoteric, something that from a power which is not centralized by a few individuals that are not known and work behind closed doors, but centralized with individuals we all know that are doing their work, that are less than, of course, hundreds, because democracy doesn't work. It's a show. It's ridiculous. It's just basically to make the show. You understand?
Correct.
So if we don't have all these actors in the play, we have less actors, we can maybe have a greater play, more significant, more... I mean, it is much better when I have on stage somebody maybe on his own portraying a Shakespearean play, you know, that when I see, for example, a scene of a movie with 100 things that are all drawn on a computer, and somebody is staging some words but is not really saying anything significant. I think that the energies of our societies have to be addressed to a new renaissance. But this new renaissance will never happen if still we stay in this state of disbelief in front of what is happening abroad. And at the same time, in the U.S., we just think that we can go on by consuming and producing weapons that can be used abroad, because they rely heavily on the weapon industry in the U.S. That's the big thing, you see?
Correct.
It is their biggest thing. So out of all these wars, even ISIS or no ISIS, all this, the people who always will make the money are the weapon dealers. You know who is a weapon dealer in Europe?
Who?
Apart from the ex-head of the York Vatican Bank, who was the treasurer of the Knights of Malta in Germany, is the husband of Angela Merkel, the head of the German state, the German prime minister. Her husband is a big weapon dealer. These people are evil, and until weapons are produced in this planet, we will always have wars. So, you want the solution? The solution is very simple for the planet. You make illegal the weapons, but for everybody, in every state of the planet, and then you have eliminated the problem. But, I mean, this will be another stage of humanity, because at the moment, I don't see it happening, you know? Don't you think? No? Don't you think that this is, you know, I mean, I don't see it happening now at the moment. As we see more and more people giving in to the weapon industry. Just by participating to this idiotic staged situation, whereby is in the Middle East or it is in somewhere else in the planet. It's all a big show made out of weapons. I thank all the people who has followed us today, because the real revolution, like Brad Olsen said in his book. That is published also on CCC Publishing, the real revolution is consciousness. And this is said in the first book in his esoteric series. And I think that we really need to have this consciousness evolution. And I speak with a lot of people every day who are starting to become aware, where before they didn't want to become aware, because let's say that the American dream was still a dream and everybody didn't wake up from what would become a nightmare. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, by the way, when you are living the dream, you don't care about nightmare. You don't care about the negative thing. You just live the dream. Sometimes you ignore the poor guy you see on the road. Sometimes you ignore things. But we don't have to ignore any longer. You know, we have to become aware. And a lot of people are becoming aware because they're seeing that there is wars, that things are happening, that, like you said before, there is signs. No?
Yep.
These signs are very strong. And so they wake up. But if the solution is then embracing some religious dogma and becoming a born-again Christian, forget it, man. I mean, then we can all go to hell, because one fundamentalism leads to the other, and we have to just, first of all, understand that religion and our thoughts in regards to religion are our own. That's it. And they shouldn't be forced on others in any way, neither with indoctrination in a Scientology way, neither with wars in the Islamic way, neither with other means. So it is our own relationship with God, which is very important, with our own selves. To know thyself is very important. Of course, there is evil. Of course, there is demons. Of course, there is Satan, for who wants to believe it. At least I believe in the demonic side, because I know also that we haven't been, created from nothing. We have been, placed on this planet with a specific mission, even ourselves. So, and we have people who have created ourselves. We have those creators, those gods, those things. That can be then viewed in various ways, the famous Anunnaki, or the Elohim, or whatever. But these people who are in the elite, I really sometimes, I shake my head more and more in front of the fact that they prefer to ignore everything else, the poor person outside, just because they have a good life. They don't care. And this is very bad.
What I can give hope to the audience as well out there, there's been several times in history where the elite have gotten their heads chopped off and died by the sword. They live by the sword. You die by the sword, and that will always ring true.
But even in that way, you become like the French Revolution and chopping the heads, and everybody, even the revolutionary themselves, instigated it, end up being chopped their heads off. I mean, and then it becomes like it starts all over again, and so it would be much better in all this if we were fronted by. The problem to watch ourselves in the mirror and say, if we continue this way, the world is going to go to hell, and that's it. We finish with a race. We are a losing race. We will not make it to the next millennium. I hope that's not the case. I hope that we will survive, but it will need a complete and radical change in our thoughts, and especially we need to sort out this religious frenzy of the end of times, that in any case seems to be going into action, because they want to simply place this end of time scenario on the table before the great transformation of humanity. And the end of time scenario means a lot of people will die. This is what they are planning, and we can't seem to stop them. And sometimes you don't even want to stop them when you see the reality of what you have outside, like I mentioned before, because of the mediocrity that you have around you.
Leo, that's a great way to end this interview. I believe you've said a lot and revealing information that can give people the truth out there, and they could do what they want with it. But I appreciate your time. Do you want to direct anybody before we leave today, or do you just want to say, hey, we'll meet again in a couple months?
Definitely we will meet again in 2 or 3 months, and I probably for the next episode, if we do it around November, we can talk about the subject in detail of my 400-500 pages new book regarding the Illuminati and the relationship with Hollywood and music.
Sure.
Because I think it's a very interesting subject, because it goes through a lot of different things, from the influence in musical instruments, how they are tuned, to the music, what kind of messages they are giving in a subliminal and obvious way, all these people. This is something that needs to be discussed in that, and I think we need a whole episode to do that, and probably we can do it when I have my new book out in Italy. So I'm starting my tour, and I will have my mind focused on that, and I can give maybe a talk on that. In the meantime, I invite people to look out for CCC Publishing, which is distributed by Independent Publishers Group in Chicago. And to follow the esotericseries.com, which is also very interesting, which is released by CCC Publishing. And my books will be finally available in the English language in the next couple of years, thanks to this courageous independent publishing company. And I'm looking forward to this new adventure. Also because my intention is to definitely move towards living permanently in the U.S. Once Europe will be, unfortunately, in a state of civil war within the next 4 to 5 years.
Well, those are some incredible statements, and I would love to have you on in November, and we could talk about the Hollywood Illuminati and the esoteric hidden secrets that are behind the music.
And there is some that not even the most the biggest wizard in the conspiracy theory world knows. I tell you, I've been going around this, when I was in the US, and I found some very interesting stuff. So I will be looking forward to share it with my listeners when the book comes out.
Definitely, Leo. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you again today. And I thank you for coming on The Gnostic Warrior. I wish you the best of luck in life and in business. And take care, buddy.
And keep on tuned also regarding the Ordo Illuminatorum Universalis, because from my next visit in the U.S., we're going to make it into an even bigger reality. And we'll put it together in the way it actually needs to be done in a proper way for the U.S., and because it is a mystery school that needs to be created by ASMO, so we can have also in the U.S. a depository for all our knowledge, and that will be transmitted not only in our generation but to the generations to come.
I agree, Leo. Again, thank you, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Take care, bud.
God bless America.
Bye, brother.